Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this special episode is a continuation of our very popular Admissions Director Q&A series. Today, I am thrilled to welcome Kirsten Moss from Stanford's Graduate School of Business. Kirsten's title is Assistant Dean of MBA Admissions and Financial Aid, and she's done a number of things in her career to date. But one thing I should note is that she also served as Director of Career Services and Director of Admissions and Financial Aid at Harvard Business School. So she truly has extensive admissions experience at some of the world's leading programs. Kirsten has an undergraduate degree in economics, government, and sociology from Harvard University, an MBA from Harvard Business School, and a doctorate in psychology from William James College. Kirsten has been at the helm of admissions at Stanford for 4+ years now, I think. So welcome, Kirsten.
So nice to be here. Thanks for that kind introduction, Graham.
Sure. So I know we have a lot of kind of questions to tackle, but the first one that I wanted, and I hope I didn't steal too much of the thunder, I wanted to hear a little bit about the journey that you've taken to land this current role. Like, how did you end up in admissions and at Stanford specifically?
Yeah. I actually began my career in investment banking on Wall Street before pursuing my MBA. So wow. I know that we get many financial applications, folks from finance, so it's always nice to have that background. But post-MBA, I really spent the last couple of decades focusing on my passion, which is leadership assessment and development. And it's been primarily in higher education. So as you said, I had the great privilege of leading both the Career Services Center and Admissions and Financial Aid at HBS. And then after moving to the West Coast, I think one of my favorite career moments was working in the classroom as a leadership facilitator at Stanford in our famed course called Interpersonal Dynamics. Mm-hmm. Some may know it as touchy-feely. And that's where I also sort of bit the leadership bug at that point. So I went on to get my doctorate in psychology, where my research focused on leadership assessment, specifically on behavioral-based interviewing, which is what we do at Stanford as well. And then also worked with in the private sector in executive recruiting. And that was fun for me because instead of looking at the early stage, you know, where our candidates aren't right now, early in their career, I was able to work on assessment and training, coaching of more senior executives. So you could really see the whole leadership journey. And then when the Dean of Admissions came open at Stanford, it was 4 years ago, 4+, as you said, what an opportunity to come to an institution that I really admire.
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds like a really interesting journey. And I feel like a lot of the experience you have must be great to have done a doctorate in this field and then to be in this role of kind of looking at, you know, candidates and trying to assess, you know, leadership and other traits. So I guess that kind of dovetails with the next question I had, which is I'd like to know, what do you really like about your job? And also if you're willing to share maybe something that you don't like so much about the job.
Absolutely. I think you just hit the nail on the head. One of my favorite parts of my job is the assessment piece. And I feel such a responsibility to get this as right as we can, to treat each candidate fairly and be really clear what we're looking for and how we evaluate. So my background dovetails nicely, but I'd say like the absolute favorite is undoubtedly getting a chance to review applications. So I try to block off maybe 2 to 3 days a week during our application round and work from home. And so assessing candidates has my full attention, and it's wonderful. I always wake up, I'll go for a run or go for a workout, sit down with my big cup of tea in front of the computer and just know I have the day to dive into essays and recommendations. And that's my passion.
Okay. And what about something you don't like? Yeah.
That's right. You asked me about the dislike. Honestly, if I look back over the last, and I've done it twice now, as you said, at HBS and now here, the thing I dislike most about being a dean of admissions is that the role can often feel all encompassing. And I'm often catching up over the weekend or late in the evening. Unlike other jobs I've held, and this one, there just don't seem to be enough hours in the work week to get it all done. And as those out there know, probably during these COVID times, working at a high speed overtime is fine for a while, but at a certain point you need to recharge and unplug. So if there's one thing I could change, maybe I'd scrunch the job into a little bit more reasonable hours.
That makes sense. And I will say, just like going back to what you said about what you like about the role, I will say, like, I think that the thing that keeps MBA admissions interesting is just how diverse the applicant pool is. I mean, people just come from every possible, you know, kind of field and and just from all over the world. I mean, I just feel like it's got to be a lot more interesting than maybe some other disciplines where you might be reading applications and they're sort of very similar. So I love that diversity that you see over and over again in MBA admissions. What about a Stanford stereotype that you would like to debunk?
This one is easy, Graham. The stereotype I hear most often from our prospects is that we are only a school for technologists or entrepreneurs.
Wow.
And nothing could be farther from the truth. And I understand that we're in Silicon Valley. We have a reputation for both of those. But I believe we're really a school for any applicant who aspires to make a positive impact in the world. Bar none. So just as you said, that diversity, no matter what industry, what type of organization, if you're someone who wants to get the skills and the expertise to make a difference. And when I say make a difference, I don't just mean social impact. I mean in any, you know, it could be in finance, it could be in consulting, it could be in media. But if you're someone who aspires to do that, then we're interested in hearing from you. And I think one of the things that's unique at Stanford is in our program, we're really helping each admit and cover what is most the work that's most meaningful to them. We have a big emphasis from even how we write our application essays to, you know, the work you do when you come in, because we believe it really does start with the candidate. It starts with them to understand where they're going to find meaning and then help them build expertise in that arena. It could be cross-functional anywhere at Stanford University. And then finally, we want them to develop the confidence and leadership capability to fulfill those aspirations. Because if you don't believe that you can do it, it's not going to happen. So please help me debunk this myth that if you don't love technology or you don't want to be an entrepreneur, then you shouldn't come to Stanford.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like every school has this, you know, there's sort of these different stereotypes out there, and they're often just so far from the truth. So I'm really glad that you're tackling that one. What's one new thing that's happening or maybe is forthcoming on campus that you wish more people knew about?
Yeah, one thing that the admissions team and me in particular are really excited about is we just launched something called the BOLD Fellows Program in this last year. And BOLD stands for Building Opportunities for Leadership Diversity. So last year in the class of 2022, we published this for the first time, this data, close to 10% of our students were first generation to attend college. And many of those students continue to support their families financially. And we know how much business school costs. So we've developed this in addition to our need-based financial aid, another fellowship. And it's really for any student who qualifies for a financial aid can apply for this. And our goal is to ensure that all students can attend Stanford regardless of their financial resources. And the selection process is really, it's need-based, and it's also for students who show a commitment to diversity. So we will this fall be announcing our first 20 fellows, and hopefully students who are in this application round right now or thinking of applying will also consider applying for the BOLD Fellowship.
Oh, that's great news. Yeah, that's terrific. I feel like that's a good segue since you just mentioned, you know, people applying and thinking through all the different steps. So can you walk me through the life of an application? Obviously, applicants know what they do on their end. You know, they pour their heart and soul into their essays and they upload everything. They have to, manage their recommenders so that they submit their stuff and everything. But then they hit submit and there's this sort of void often. And so if you could just tell us, like, what happens when you get the file and maybe walk us through until someone gets a decision?
Thanks for asking, Graham. We know our application is perhaps one of the longest out there. So there's multiple essays. And actually, if you spend time, it's a significant amount of time to read each and every application. So once the applicant submits, they are reviewed by the members of our admissions committee. And you know, that's over a period of weeks for us to read and review all of those different applications. And then from these assessments, approximately 1,000 candidates are invited to interview. And we tend to think of it almost as 2 applicants for every seat in the class. And then once the interview evaluations are submitted, the admissions committee reviews the complete file again holistically to determine who will be admitted. Oftentimes, I think candidates believe that interview is this critical, am I going to make it or not? It's really for us this one more data point. So we have a live opportunity to speak with a candidate that we put in the context of that whole application again.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're underlining that, because I think that is one of the questions that people always have is like, oh, do, you know, once I get the interview, are they going to care about my test scores or my academic profile? Or is it just, it's all based on the interview? And it sounds like, no, you're going back and looking at everything again to make a holistic assessment, which is that's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want the nerves to be so high on the interview that you don't perform as well as you could.
Right.
Awesome.
So if you mentioned that you tend to interview about 1,000 individuals, so do you have a sense of like what percentage of that of the applicant pool is getting an interview? Because it sounds like once they get an interview, you've got a 1 and 2, like you're talking about how there's sort of 2 interviews for each one space. But what about on the front end?
Yeah. So it's usually about, and every year there's a different number of applications, but it's about 10% or a little bit more than 10% of our applicants.
Okay, that makes sense. So go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say we usually have, you know, 7,000 plus, so 10 to 15%, I'd say.
Got it. Okay. If you had to give candidates one tip about the application essays, what would it be?
So Graham, I think I'd like to answer that question a little more holistically, if that's okay.
Sure.
And give you perhaps one tip about how to put their best foot forward in the application process. Writing the essays is important. I know we can talk more about that, but if I had to start, if I were giving advice for, if you're an applicant out there who's thinking about applying or actually starting that process right now, what would I say? Really, my tip would be to make sure that you cover both who you are and what you've done. And the goal of our application at Stanford is really to give the applicant plenty of real estate to share their whole story, to share both of those things. So we're as interested in your achievements as we are in the context in which they've happened. Mm-hmm. So if I were starting the application, I would want to think about 2 or 3 stories that I'm most proud of. So for an applicant, make sure that when you're thinking about these stories, you're not thinking about what Kirsten Moss or the admissions committee thinks are most important. It's really what are most meaningful to you. Maybe you came up with a new idea that helped your team be more efficient, or maybe you mentored a colleague who was struggling, or even maybe one of the stories you're most proud of is you're first to graduate college in your family and you had to hold multiple jobs while you're studying to pay for your education. So it's really, what are you most proud of? Because where you put your efforts, that's going to generate meaning, and that's what we want to know about. So we have a short answer question in our application essentially that says this: tell us about an impact you've made that's meaningful. And that's where you can share some of these stories. And I just want to make sure as my tip that this is the part of the application where we do want to know your achievements, but they're in your context. It's not an achievement. It's not being the president of your class necessarily, or, you know, being an Olympic medalist. It's really about what you have worked towards and what you care about.
Got it. Yeah. And I feel like, given the nature of your, I think it's your first essay, which is the, which we're going to talk about in a second, the what matters most to you and why, I feel like taking that sort of personal inventory is a really good idea. You know, like thinking about before you sort of dive in, like thinking about, as you say, the stories that you have and the context and all the, you know, all aspects of it, so that, yeah, you just have a lot at your disposal to kind of tap into as you begin the application process.
Yeah.
But maybe you can talk us through, I know that, you know, the essay question, what matters most to you and why, has been a mainstay of the admissions process at Stanford for many years. And so I would just love to know, like, what do you like about this question and how do you find it to be helpful in the assessment process?
Great question, Graham. And it really dovetails with my prior answer, because we do want to know what your achievements are that you're proud of, but we also want to know about who you are. So we ask this essay is really about the essence of who you are, perhaps the values or motivations that have shaped who you've become. It's not an easy one to write by any means, but we believe it's a critical exercise, even if you decide not to come to Stanford, but just for you as a leader to know what you care about and what you stand for. Given my research and doing my doctorate, there's lots out there that talk about how your deepest values and motivation are the wind in your sails as a leader to give you that energy to actually you know, to actually have the impact that you're interested in. It's what gets you up in the morning. So we do really want to know what you've achieved so far. We look at your past behavior to predict your future behavior. But in addition, this essay is really about, tell us who you are as a person. So what's going to motivate you going forward? Mm-hmm. And there's no right or wrong answer here. We don't grade this, like, this is a good motivation, this is not. It's truly helping to get us to know about you as a person.
Excellent. Yeah, I feel like it's funny that you said whether you apply to Stanford or not, because I have a colleague of mine who I co-host the Clear Admit podcast with usually. He's like, has this bee in his bonnet about how he thinks that everyone should answer this question when they start the MBA application process.
We need him on the show.
I know. Awesome. And he just never stops saying that. And I'm always like, okay, yeah, it's actually a good idea, because it is a really great way to think about, like, why are you, what are you doing? You know, what's the reason? What gets you out of bed? What are you, So very interesting. I do want to know more.
Could I go on?
Yeah.
Part of that too, for if you talk to our current students and recent alumni and say, what's the hardest thing about going to Stanford? The vast majority will say it's FOMO. There's so much going on, and how do you choose, and how do you know which speaker to attend, or which event, or which professor to go to lunch with, because there are just so many arenas happening, really flying at you at one point. So we really believe that this essay is the very beginning of your success in coming to Stanford, because it's helping you get in touch with, what am I going to care about? How do I spend my time? How to make those choices? And I'll say one other thing too, Graham, is even though this one is hard to write, I think the best advice I could give is to spend time on the reflecting. Maybe it's 80-20, mm-hmm. reflecting versus writing. Perhaps one of the things that I did in crafting my own version of this essay, because I thought it was important for me to, if our candidates have to do it, then I need to do it too.
Yeah.
But to think about pivotal moments in your life. Like, there's certain iconic moments that we go back to and understand why they were important. Or maybe what are the choices that you've made, whether it's in your extracurriculars or what you chose to study or even where you chose to work. And ask yourself why you made these choices, because they'll lead you down a path of understanding these underlying interests or values that you've gotten that have motivated you in the past. So how can you bring those to life for us?
That's really interesting. Like, I think that's a really great, almost like a bit of a roadmap for someone to use as they embark on this prompt, because it is a kind of a daunting question. But I feel like the way you just described it makes it sound a lot easier to kind of think through. So that's terrific. I do want to shift gears and talk about the interview process. So, I know that I believe alumni conduct most of the interviews, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. But also, I just wanted to know, like, what should one do? Like, if they get an interview invitation, what do you recommend they do to sort of prepare for that interview?
Well, if they get one, get excited, because that's fantastic news, as we just talked about. It's a really good sign.
Yep.
Interviews at Stanford are structured and they're behavior-based, and I'll explain that a little bit. They are conducted primarily by our alumni who are across the globe. During COVID, obviously, they were Zoom. And going forward, will likely be a mixture, a choice of Zoom or in person. And all of our interviewers are trained in this methodology. So in your application, a candidate has a chance to tell us about the impact that they've had, essentially these achievements that are meaningful. And you've written about them in your application, as well as we learn about them through your recommendations. But we really learn about them, on paper without being able to ask any probing questions or learn more. So the interview is really an opportunity for you to share these same stories. You'll be asked questions like the one I talked about before. Tell me about a time you had an impact that was meaningful to you. So they'll be that basic, or tell me about a challenge, or tell me about a time you've worked on a team. There will be lots of ways for you to bring the stories that you think are most meaningful to bear in the interview. And we're going to want to know, I want you to be the hero in your interview. Hmm. So I've told you what the questions are. All you need to do to prepare is to be able to say, what was the context or challenge that you faced? What did you do about it? And then why was it meaningful? What was that impact from your perspective? And these stories can come from your university or your professional organizations, extracurricular activities. Some applicants made an impact in sports. Some might have done it in like music or art. Others even in their religious communities, or for some in their family. we're really truly agnostic about what kind of story is told. We care more about how it has created a positive impact for the applicant or for their communities. And so in some ways, this interview should be not stressful, because I can really give you a clear indicator of how to show up and prepare for them. You can expect your interviewer, if you're telling the story, to ask you some probing questions. Maybe they want to, if you said, I was able, you know, my boss gave me some resources to make this happen, they might say, oh, what were the resources? Tell me more about that. What kind of conversation did you have in order to obtain these? We'll be looking for those details to understand the context a little bit better.
If you're willing to share, does the person that's interviewing you, whether it's an alum or whoever it might be, have they read the file, or is this a chance for you to kind of start from scratch and tell these stories, or how much do they know about you?
Great question. The alumni have only seen your resume, so these stories will be brand new for them as you're telling them.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. And you were going to say something else about the interview, and I kind of cut you off before.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. I'll say one more thing about the alumni. They will send in an evaluation to us, and that's one of my favorite things, too, about the admissions process, is getting a chance to read all of these interview assessments. So then they'll come back to the interview committee. I was also going to say it's a 45-minute interview. The last 15 minutes about, you'll have an opportunity to get to know the interviewer better. So there's someone from the community who's been to the program. So please come prepared to both talk about, in addition to your stories, you know, why you're interested in the MBA and Stanford, and also questions for your interviewer and what their journey has been like, because that's really a chance for you to understand a little bit about our culture. But I'd say that's the best advice I can give you on how to be well prepared for your 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's terrific. And I was going to ask you, actually, if how much of the time, or if they get a chance to just interact with the alum in the context of like probing them about, you know, what was it like to go to Stanford, and or even talking about their career. So that's terrific. I think that is one of those great benefits when you get to connect as an applicant with someone who's a member of the school's community and has, you know, attended the program and stuff. So that's terrific that you guys provide for that and kind of bake it in. I want to shift gears again and ask about deferred enrollment, because this is something that's been coming up more and more. We see more and more, younger folks on our website. And so there are questions about deferred enrollment, and sort of often the question is, who should be applying deferred as a college senior versus just following the more traditional path to an MBA at Stanford?
Great question. And I think I've seen some other schools may have a profile or the type of applicant they're looking for. We really welcome all applicants who are interested in becoming leaders. And I think of the MBA as an opportunity to do that, who want to make this positive change in the world. So there's no particular specific profile that we're looking for or seeking beyond that. Applicants can apply in any of our three rounds, although many target the third round. And candidates for the deferred program are assessed using the same evaluation criterion that we use for the direct admits. We just recognize that the context is very different because you're coming from college and haven't worked yet. So we'll be looking for, as I said, we'll still be looking for those stories. Many more of them likely are coming from college. We'll still be looking for what you're intellectually curious about, what you've studied. And we'll also be looking for your perspectives that you bring to the classroom and getting to know you through that What Matters Most and Why essay.
Got it. Okay. That's good to know. I think, you know, you're right. There are some programs where they say, oh, this, you know, our deferred program is specifically for this type of undergrad or something, where they're trying to like appeal to a certain profile or something.
Yeah,
so that's good to know. Another thing that I have to ask, just given the times that we currently live in, is what do we need to know about COVID and your sort of current plans? I know everything's a little bit fluid, but do you expect to have sort of in-person classes this fall for the MBA students? And also, do you know if you'll be doing campus visits at any point in this coming academic cycle, or does that seem still up in the air?
So at this point, we're planning for, I call it back to normal, for the class of 2023. We have current students on campus already this summer who are in that situation right now. We are requiring students, faculty, and staff to receive vaccinations unless there's a health or religious reason not to. And we've not yet resumed class visits, so that's still up in the air. We will likely do it at least beginning this winter, if not a little earlier. So keep your eyes on our site to see additional information about that. We're really, this will depend on the course of the pandemic and how it develops.
Yeah, that makes sense. So those were the main kind of admissions questions I had, but we found that our listeners also, they want to get to know the admissions representatives from the different schools. And so we do, at the end of these interviews, we'd like to do something called a lightning round, where we ask you some more fun questions. So if you're willing to play along, I have a handful of kind of silly questions, but we often have a lot of fun with them. So if you're willing, I'm going to just fire away and we'll just go back and forth on these.
Awesome. I'm up for it, Graham.
All right. So I think I know the answer to this first question based on a clue that you gave earlier in this episode, but I'm going to ask it. Do you prefer coffee or tea?
I'd actually say both. And lately, I've been leaning towards chai tea.
Okay. Got it. All right. Beach or mountain?
Beach, for sure.
Okay. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning is definitely my best focus time.
Okay. What's a pet peeve that you have, something that kind of bugs you?
I would say being slowed down. So that can be sitting in traffic or waiting in a long line. But I've been doing a lot of yoga lately as well, so I'm trying to embrace a more flexible mindset, though, now and try to feel appreciation for the time I have rather than just annoyance for the time lost. So that's a fine balance.
Okay, got it. Makes sense. What's a guilty pleasure that you have?
Popcorn. It's one of my favorite things, especially when I'm reading applications. It's can be a little over the top.
Excellent. What is your favorite virtue in others?
I would say humility. And it's actually really in the ethos of Stanford, the GSB. So it's something that I'm surrounded by and really admire.
Makes sense. Yeah. What about a happy place that you love to be in?
My happy place is, if there's one in the world, it's a place called Hammond Beach, and it's a beautiful cove in Southern California that my family and I spend time in.
Excellent. What about a comfort food?
Well, we have a family comfort food. I don't know if this would be my favorite, but we have it a lot, so it's becoming my comfort food. A big tradition in our house, because we have three kids, is hot dog night. And I think it was started by my husband. It means lots of pickles and slaw and sauerkraut and onions, you name it. But it becomes an entire thing. Wow. You know, it's not easy to make a hot dog in the Moss household.
That's excellent. I don't know if you remember, but I live overseas. And so because I want my kids to be at least like a little American, we do something too, like called American night once a week.
Oh, that's awesome.
And often we will try to have like hot dogs or hamburgers or, you know, sometimes better American or, you know, like, I don't know, healthier American food too, but they love hot dogs. But yeah, we're not quite as elaborate though. I don't think I have as good access to things like pickles and stuff, but yes.
It's a whole new level going on here.
Excellent. All right. So what has been your proudest moment?
I recently, I just celebrated my 25th year anniversary with my husband. And I think that's got to be at least one of my proudest moments.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What about a biggest regret?
I would say not moving to California sooner. I had, when I was graduating from college, I had some job opportunities on the East Coast, and I came out for spring break, and I thought, wow, this would be so cool to get to California, and I really couldn't find, dig one up by myself, and I sort of let that dream die, but now I'm here, I'm like, dang, it would have been nice to get gotten out here a decade or two earlier.
Got it. All right. So there's no return to the East Coast in your future, it sounds like. You're sold.
Yeah, I'm sold.
Makes sense. All right. So what is one thing you would change about the way that you were raised?
That's interesting. So this is a journey that I've been on where I discovered this. I think I would, if I could change one thing, it would be learning to share my, I call them negative emotions or maybe sad emotions with others more easily. My mother is British, and she always taught us to have a stiff upper lip no matter what the problem. She grew up in World War II. There's so many things that they survived in England at the time, which has its benefits. But now as a leadership coach, I've learned over time that showing a wide range of emotions, being able to show almost, you know, all emotions, whether it's sad, excited, frustrated, angry, that connects you with others and makes you more authentic. So I find that would be, if I could go back, it might be having an opportunity to just be sad. And that would be okay. Yeah. a long answer to the lightning round there.
No, but it's a really good response. And I think that, I feel like the field of leadership and, you know, management, it's just really evolved over time to where, you know, authenticity and being able to express yourself is actually, you know, it's clearly an important thing. So makes sense. Although I understand the perspective of someone who maybe lived through the war and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
How about a superpower that you wish you had?
This one's easy. I definitely would love to breathe underwater. No doubt I could live in the ocean. That would be awesome.
Oh, that is so cool. You know, it's funny. We've had a lot of like, I want to fly or be able to teleport or whatever, but this is original and very cool. And I, as someone who's been scuba diving, I totally get, you know, imagine.
Exactly.
You can just...
exactly. Just hang out there, right?
That's awesome. That would be awesome. All right. This is maybe an unfair question, but which part of the Stanford admissions process would you most like to skip if you were applying today?
So this is funny because it's... no surprise, the GMAT or GRE, but why it's funny to me anyways, is when I recently received my doctorate or 4 or 5 years ago, in order to even apply to the program, I had to take the GRE. So I completely empathize. And I remember literally dragging that GRE workbook with me where at whatever meeting I was going to, wherever I was traveling, I had that thing for months. So if I had to do it again, I really would have a hard time with that because it was really tough the first time.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. And this one's just for fun. What's the best thing that you've either read, watched, or listened to recently?
So just this last weekend, I finished My Year Abroad, a novel by Chang Rae Lee. And it was phenom. I don't know if you've heard about it. It just came out pretty recently. The two main characters are character development was remarkable. It was sort of like Holden Caulfield meets Yoda. It's really, really cool. So highly recommend it for anyone who likes a good novel.
Wow. Excellent. Okay. I'm keeping a list because, you know, I've been talking to other admissions directors, so I'm getting all kinds of great, I'm going to have plenty of books to read this summer, which is great. So Kirsten, I really appreciate you making time out of I know you're super busy. So I really appreciate you making time to chat and to share a lot of insights. I think that folks tuning in who are, you know, obviously interested in Stanford have got a lot to, you know, there's just a lot of really good tidbits here for them to go on as they begin their application process. So thank you so much for making time.
Oh, it was such a pleasure, Graham. Always wonderful to speak with you.
So everyone, stay tuned to the Cleared Mid MBA Admissions Podcast for more Q&As, as well as our weekly Wiretaps episodes. And as always, thanks for rating and reviewing this podcast wherever you listen.